Welcome everyone to another episode of the Elemental Awakening Podcast. Today I got a special guest. His name is Ernie Pavan. Welcome, Ernie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, John.
And Ernie runs a company called Avalon Empowerment. He's also a NLP trainer, master practitioner, a bunch of other amazing things too. And he's one of those people that his name kept coming up. You got to meet Ernie. You got to meet Ernie. So in all transparency, I'm really meeting him here for the first time today on camera. So I'm going to ask him all the questions I'd probably ask him in our first meeting.
Absolutely.
Here to share with you guys. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And just tell me a bit more about who you are, as I labeled you a NLP practitioner, What that means, and a bit more about what you do right now.
So I wonder if our viewers know what NLP is, so maybe I'll open that up.
Perfect, yeah.
So NLP stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. It was a model that originated in the 1970s by two university professors, John Grinder and Richard Bandler. And what they were doing was looking around the world for models of excellence. And whenever they found a model of excellence, they would go and investigate and find out what that person was doing. And then look at the details of what that person was accomplishing, and then they would turn it into a process, and that process was part of the whole compendium of neuro-linguistic programming. So what is neuro-linguistic programming? It's a trail of techniques of excellence that all of us can learn and apply in the world of business, in the world of education, in the world of therapy. So, for example, they kept hearing about Virginia Satir. Virginia Satir was a family therapist having tremendous success. And when they went to look at what she was doing, they realized that the style of her communication was all about getting very, very detailed. So, in a simple example, if one of her clients said, my wife doesn't love me, she would say, how specifically do you know that your wife doesn't love you? And it was in that model of very detailed communication that she was having these incredible results. Then they were hearing about someone called Milton Erickson, psychiatrist, one of the 20th century's most notable hypnotherapists. And when they went to investigate what he was doing, they found out that his style of communication was very abstract. So anyway, Bandler and Grinder started looking at all these styles and turned every one of the techniques into a process. And these are processes that any of us can use. NLP, in short, is the study of human communication, how we communicate externally to others, and how we communicate internally with ourselves.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
So they took a bunch of different, techniques, mm-hmm. and put them under this sort of
umbrella
of NLP. So are they adding new techniques over time? Like, are new things coming over they realize, or they all fall under a similar sort of framework?
The basis is there, but ultimately we're always open to new processes and new techniques. So it's a wide variety of tools. It's very applicable to a positive mindset.
Okay.
Positive mindset, forward thinking, and utilizing these models of excellence for not only for ourselves but also for our clients.
Okay, I'm just writing down some notes for some later questions.
Of course.
Okay, so tell me a bit about you. Were you always into this kind of stuff?
No.
How does one become a master practitioner? I'm sure there's a journey that preceded that,
absolutely.
That whole evolution. So tell me a bit about how you started out.
Absolutely. My professional career started as a high school English teacher.
Okay.
That was 31 years ago. Last year I celebrated 30 years of education. And I started as a high school English teacher. I did that for 10 years. Loved every bit of it. And then transitioned into my role as a high school guidance counselor. And it was at that time, as I was making that transition, that was 20 years ago in the year 2000, I started my own business. I had a lot of talent.
Why, you waited till Y2K happened to make sure that everything didn't occur. If we make it to Y2K, I'll start that
then
business.
Then I can do anything. If we made it here, I can do anything. So, as it turns out, I had, over and above my teaching career, I had a number of talents, I had a number of interests. I started in the world of energetics, I got trained in Reiki, and I was doing a lot of energy work, and finding that I was exceptionally talented. And in the year 2000, I officially started my part-time business. And primarily, I left the world of energetics, but I started working in a technique which now is called the quantum change process. And
is that your own process, quantum change?
Yes. I was trained in an original modality, but it evolved and changed so dramatically that I rebranded it. I renamed it the quantum change process.
Quantum change process. And before you get into that,
yes.
You said you left the energy...
The world of Reiki.
The world of Reiki.
And hands-on...
What made that shift? Was there any particular reason?
Yes, just because of the level of success I was having in all the other arenas, which was mostly by communicating.
Mm. So you found a more effective tool for the business you had to empower people.
Right.
And Reiki was...
It was just a natural progression.
Okay.
So I moved into that space. So I started the business. I was still a high school teacher. I was a guidance counselor at this point. This was 20 years ago. The business quickly flourished. And, one day I woke up and realized I had two full-time jobs. I was a full-time teacher.
So sorry, just to clarify, the business was consulting people one-on-one or training people?
And no, at this point it was in the years 2000 to 2009, 2010, it was just me working with individuals.
Just trying to help them,
and
personal development or like...
Yes.
Whatever you could, and that evolved into...
Whatever was ailing them on a physical, mental, or emotional, or spiritual level, people would come to see me, they would give me their reason for coming to see me. And and ultimately the sessions would unfold from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In 2009, the world of NLP sort of showed up, and it was an absolute perfect fit. And in 2010, I became a trainer. So all of a sudden, I realized I got to the point where, I was doing all this one-on-one work, and people were saying, "Teach me what you do. Teach me what you do." And ultimately, I had a personal mission to transform the consciousness of the planet in any way I could, and
you're on the same team.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I realized, the benefits, if I could actually train people to do what I do, then the amount of service and the amount of help was going to be exponential. So I've been training since 2010. I mean, I started earlier than that, but the professional certification trainings started in 2010, and I'm still here today.
Wow. So what has changed, if anything, since 2010? Like, has the industry evolved in a way? Like, I've been hearing a lot more about NLP.
Yeah.
And is there, like, one school of thought under NLP? Are there different people having different sort of variations of it?
There are different branches of the world of NLP. I think the foundation are essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
There are many different branches, and... ultimately, the foundation is essentially the same. We're really changing. We found that over the years, especially over the last 5 years, there was a very spiritual component to the trainings. The trainings became very transformational.
Can you define that a little bit deeper?
When
you say it became spiritual, so
mm-hmm.
So was it not spiritual, it was more technical, and then people started having these... How would you explain it? Yeah.
So I lead a very profoundly rich, deep spiritual life. I always have. Consciously since age 24. And it just started to evolve in the training. So it was just a natural byproduct. People were coming to us for an education. And ultimately, they were getting their education all right. We're very... big on making sure that we deliver quality in what we teach.
Mm-hmm.
However, there again, their spiritual component started showing up in the trainings. Who am I? What's my purpose here?
Mm-hmm.
What is it I'm here to do? How may I serve?
And did you align with any like religious spiritual teachings? Or was it more like non-denominational?
Non-denominational. I was raised Catholic. I was raised in a Christian environment. I spent a lot of time among our Jewish friends. I taught at a yeshiva. And, Christianity is rooted in Judaism anyway. I traveled extensively, and that's what exposed me to the world of Buddhism and Hinduism. So my attitude has always been, and then we have, you know, Islam and all the riches that can be found in there. So ultimately, I've always loved learning about world religions. I've taken whatever appeal to me spiritually from each one of those world religions, but ultimately I'm non-denominational.
Okay. So then there was these elements in these trainings that people started asking deeper questions. So it wasn't so much about reprogramming the way they spoke. That was unlocking deeper questions.
The deeper questions: who am I? Why am I here? How may I serve? What must I heal? So the trainings took on a very transformational nature. You know, it became a lot about self-awareness and then self-actualization. And so we just finished a book. We called it Evolved NLP. It's the same foundational aspects of NLP. We put our own twist on it. So we just released this book in the past month. And
So I guess the typical process, and I'm just thinking out loud here, someone would have some issues, whether it be anxiety, depression, trauma, maybe mental blocks, not feeling themselves. They probably start off as a patient. What do you call a patient, or like a
client?
Client.
Yes.
They have some sort of breakthroughs, and they want to then probably do this as a profession. Is that typically the process?
It's different for everyone. Some people come to us, without any issues. They're just interested in learning about NLP, and you know, they've heard about us. So that's how we get approached. Some people start off as clients.
So I
give you a classic example. My partner, one of my partners, Laura Slim, she first came to me as a client. I believe it was in 2010 or 2011 when I met her originally. She came to me because she was struggling with stage 4 endometriosis. She desperately wanted to be a mother. But she was having difficulties getting pregnant. When she got diagnosed, of course, it was a severe case of endometriosis. She was told she would never be able to have a baby. And in the story, it's a lovely story, and much nicer hearing it from her, so maybe I'll interview her at some point. But ultimately, I'm always open to anything. I was using the quantum change process with her. And it's a process of muscle testing or applied in behavioral kinesiology. So it taps into the person's unconscious mind, and the body will reveal, you know, where this issue first began, who it involves. And according to the muscle testing, I said, hey, something happened to you when you were 16. And here was her obstetrician telling her that she had one of the most diseased wounds he had ever seen. She was... her ovaries were fused. She was filled with scar tissue. A whole series of problems. They were actually recommending a bowel sectioning resectioning surgery, and also recommending a hysterectomy.
Wow.
So here she was.
How old was she at this point?
She was in her early 30s. So essentially, these surgeries were, had she proceeded, would have plunged her into menopause in her early 30s, and she would have never been able to conceive, certainly after a hysterectomy.
Yeah, it's possible.
So, we did the work according to her body. I said, hey, according to your body, something happened to you when you were 16 years old. What's going on there? And as the story unfolded, she was a victim of date rape. And sort of knocked unconscious and then woke up realizing something had happened, and, shortly after finding out she was pregnant, not knowing what to do. You could imagine how difficult it was for her at that young age. A decision was made to have an abortion. And her parents, bless them, they were very, very supportive and very proactive. So they found out about the abortion. Ultimately, they got her through the process. And they wanted to be proactive and deal with it, but at 16 years old, she just wanted the whole thing to go away. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to deal with it. So she just sort of shut the whole thing down. And this many years later, her body responded to, the inherent emotions that were attached to that, which was rage and anger for what had happened, but also a tremendous level of shame.
Mm-hmm.
And a terrible monster limiting belief that she was undeserving of being a mother. In the process of our work together, we dealt with all of those emotions and the limiting belief.
So then the neuro-linguistic programming is finding out the ways in which she has self-talk?
Neuro-linguistic programming is a wide range of...
So in this case, would you consider, or is the your quantum healing process...
Quantum
is just it's a fraction of that overall.
Yes, the quantum change process is very distinct from NLP, but the two of them fuse together beautifully.
It's a combination.
It's a beautiful blending of the two because both of them work with the unconscious mind.
So once you had identified what your body told the issue was, like this is because of this,
and then we did the necessary background work. One was the quantum change process, and then I saw her again, and we used an NLP process to help clear the limiting belief and the emotions around it. Basically, it amounted to two sessions, and in her case, her body went into spontaneous healing, and within months, she became pregnant naturally.
Wow.
Now she's got two children. So this whole sort of, we joke about it in the trainings. We call it miracles. They're just
it absolutely is.
But they happen.
It's very interesting. The story. I'm not sure if you watched my documentary, but those of you out there who have, there's a story in the documentary of a woman who had a very difficult upbringing. A lot of physical sexual abuse,
right.
Ended up becoming addicted to heroin for 18 years. Mm-hmm. And then through plant medicine, ayahuasca, this is something I'd love to talk to you a bit more about.
Mm-hmm.
The shaman and her figure out that she has these spirits in her womb. And the shaman is telling her that you've had three abortions, you only had two, and they had this conversation, go back and forth. And this is this healing that she has to undertake. And by the end of it, she ends up staying an extra week, does a few more ceremonies specifically on healing the womb, which is, at this point, it's hard to say what you believe in. Are there spirits in there? Is it a memory? Is it the self-talk about the shame of doing that? So they end up performing this last ceremony. She ends up having this healing done. And after 18 years, she gets her menstrual cycle back. After 18 years, and many people those experiences are super traumatic, and you think it's over with, you just want to leave it behind. There's always that damage that's done that's sort of left back in the memory. I think that needs to be dealt with.
Right.
I've tried to talk about this a bit on social media, and a lot of people get super defensive about what's the lasting effect on the mother that needs to heal past the actual surgery or whatever it is in the abortion? Like, there's more stuff there that has to be dealt with, and it's something that shouldn't be taken very lightly, because
absolutely,
even if you decide I can't be a mother, in the back of your mind, what's really going on, the subconscious mind, about what that means, the guilt of terminating a life.
And Laura was completely unaware. She knew what happened to her at 16, and I dealt with it, it's good, it's all gone, it's in the past. She had absolutely no awareness of how palpable that those memories and the experience was running through her body.
No matter how long it is, it's stored.
It's stored, and even though she remembered it, she said, it's something that happened, it's something I dealt with, it has nothing to do with my current reality. And in fact, it had everything to do with her reality at that time. And there's so many different stories. I mean, NLP is not all about therapy. We get a lot of people who come just because they want a positive mindset, or they want to develop their business, or they, you know.
Well, that's what I've heard as well. Like, and I've even sort of heard that it can be used in manipulating ways as well, like in the sales process, like just getting people to start agreeing and like just getting their train of thought in the right way. And I'm sure guys can use it when they're picking up women. Right. Like, so yeah.
Have you heard about that book? So this is, again, this is another distinguishing thing about the way we approach it. NLP, that the tools are so powerful, and the change or the transformation that can happen can be very, very quick, especially when working with a trained, skilled practitioner. However, the skills being what they are, there are people out there that use them as tools for manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians use these tools.
Is Trump an expert at NLP?
They're all experts at NLP.
So give us some examples so like the people listening will know when people are using things. Well, like what are the main telltale signs? Like,
it's so diverse. It could be in languaging. It could be in body movement.
Like, yeah, if you agree or if you like this, raise your hands, or people are starting to like acknowledge.
That's,
or like getting them to say yes after each sentence.
Also,
like you'd agree,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Like something
yes.
like that. Yeah.
So, they are tools that could be used manipulatively. So, in our world, we say, you know, our trainings use the force for good. Not the force.
I just watched all the Star Wars things.
Use
all
the force,
Use
the force for good, Luke. So we run a very high level of ethics and integrity. We insist on it from all of our students and our graduates. But there are people, you know, ultimately, do you know anyone manipulative? Have you ever met a
manipulative?
Right.
Business model.
But are they trained in NLP? And not necessarily, but manipulation is a choice.
It's a choice. Absolutely.
Whether you're trained in NLP or not. But if you are trained in NLP and you want to use it as a vehicle for manipulation, then it can be very manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
We don't... this is, again, you know, why we just wrote this book, Evolved NLP. And in the book, we actually address this topic, that, you know, we just don't have tolerance for that kind of behavior. We use it for self-actualization, self-development, personal empowerment, and if necessary, as a vehicle for healing, changing, transforming areas of our life that just aren't working for us.
Interesting. So, you know, just back to the plant medicine stuff, I'm sure in the space, you know, people are becoming more vocal, a lot more people are using psychedelics as a tool for personal development.
Right.
I know a lot of people are also abusing them as well in similar ways. Do you find the crowds coming into your NLP trainings? Is it a topic they talk about, maybe combining the two together? Because I know, like, right now in the plant medicine world, we've seen amazing transformations, anecdotally, through using the medicine. But not always is there long term. Some people will do it once and then do it again. Some people will do it, feel great, 3 or 4 months later they'll go down. So there seems to be some need for more tools to unpack the experiences to make sense of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious if you've had any practitioners or people that are using them, ask you, or that you know of, or trying to combine the two.
Up until a year ago, you never heard of it. No one was talking about it. I'd heard about ayahuasca before and so on. But ultimately, no one was talking about it. In the past year, it seems like everyone's talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some people come through the trainings who have experimented or are experimenting. And then a lot of people who are interested. I'm hearing stories from a lot of people who are actually engaging in those experiences from a therapeutic standpoint with success.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I don't know enough about it.
Well, I'd volunteer to be a guinea pig for you to bring me through a session under the influence to see what could come up.
Yeah,
if you're ever open to that, we can chat about that.
I find that with the techniques that we do, I'm not debating about plant medicine or not, but.
Do you think some of the stuff beyond the surface is accessible without any of the plant medicines? You can get to that level?
Absolutely.
Okay. So someone like myself, if I wanted to become a client, but I didn't really have anything specific that I work on. Like, I know, like, sometimes I'm put too much on my plate, you know, like, I go through phases in my life where I'm solely stressed out, and then, like, everything is, like, peaches, and I'm throwing myself, you know, back into that sort of, like, gauntlet of wanting to save the world again and stressing myself out. What would the approach be? Would it be just a self, like, an exploratory session? Would it, how would something like that work? Someone doesn't have a specific thing, but, like, you know, like, I'm curious. Like, I'm on this journey of self-discovery. Like, how would you approach someone like that?
I ultimately, it would be an engagement, a discussion, like the one you and I are having right now. It depends on what we're doing. Let's say we were doing the quantum change process. It's very important to have a very specific intention, because once I go into the muscle testing, the muscle testing is responding to that. But it doesn't have to be specific. Like, you know, for example, you know, I'd like to deal with my stage 4 endometriosis. That's why Laura came. If you were
that
coming,
you got very specific.
It was very specific, and the body immediately started talking about what happened.
So do people come and ask you about,
So in your case, you know, you're saying, no, I just want to be more general. Like, hey, I tend to, you know, and I would talk to you more and engage you in a specific questioning so that we would get a little bit more specific. It could still remain general, the way you just mentioned, but I would just tighten it up a bit and then start testing if we were doing the quantum change process. People come for a variety of reasons. People come because, you know, they're having money issues. People come because they're having relationship issues.
Okay, so something like that. So if someone's having a money issue, for example, you get to the room, there's probably some blockage in their sort of the way they talk and think internally and externally, or like
No, it's, again, so let's say someone comes and says, listen, I'm constantly running into money problems. I need to get to the source of it. You know, I no longer want to be in debt. And so the intention would be to get to the root source of whatever's causing this money issue. Now, the money issue could be going on for decades, but there's a root. And typically when you get to the root, all of a sudden it sets the stage, and then you see how this problem has cycled through their lives. Chances are there's some limiting beliefs attached to it all.
So it's maybe something in childhood.
And it all shows up in every session.
Like, give me an example of something that might have limited someone's ability to...
Programming from parents.
Like what their parents said to them as kids, like, don't spend your money, or like,
yeah,
you
well,
never
here, have here, why don't we talk about me?
Okay.
Right? I was born in a sort of a middle-class family, and there were certainly, you know, we weren't wealthy by any means, but there was no poverty, and, you know, it's just a middle-class existence. It was around the time that I wanted to start my business. I was doing all this energy work, and I was having tremendous success, but I was doing it all for free.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the path of many people.
I was doing it all for free, and one of the mentors at the time said, you're breaking universal law of giving and receiving. Like, you're great at giving, but you're great at giving, but you're terrible at receiving. You're breaking universal law. And my reaction was, you don't understand. Very haughty spiritual guy. But the bottom line, what was driving that you don't understand stuff, was I was, again, a very spiritually minded person. But what I had running based on my upbringing was, you can't be spiritual and make money too. Because if you are, you're a charlatan, you're a crook, you're... And this was all sort of the Christian programming that, you know, I'd learned as a young boy. And it was running. You know, here I was wanting to start a business, knowing I had the talent, but not allowing myself to receive because of this belief from my childhood. Once I cleared the belief and I realized, you know, you can't be spiritual and make money too. Really, tell that to Oprah.
Right.
Tell that to Deepak Chopra.
Mm-hmm.
And once I cleared that and realized, no, I could be spiritual and I could do great work.
So when you say the word clear that, is that like a process? Like, what would that look like in a clearing?
It was a limiting belief that I released using the quantum change process.
And what can you explain any further? Like, the releasing, is that something that you have to go into the whole process?
In the quantum change process, the main catalyst that causes the release is a process of forgiveness.
Okay.
So you bring them through this whole process
of forgiveness. Forgiving those who...
And then is there like a specific feeling that the person feels when they
it's
release
different.
That?
Yes. It's
like, there's a, like you, is the shift perceptible?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they feel that shift happening.
Yes, it's very powerful.
Wow.
Forgiveness is a very powerful process.
Yeah, no, I'm a big one in like when we use breath work, we use like a lot of Ho'oponopono, so
yeah.
Like, I love you, thank
yeah.
you, forgive you, please forgive me. And I notice, especially when we direct it back at the self, so like when you're in, like, once you've done some breath work, you become like very in this space of, I guess you're open,
mm-hmm.
is the right way to say it, it's suggestible also.
Right.
When you visualize yourself and then you go into the self forgiveness, it's just like people start crying,
right.
opening up. It's like super powerful. So if you can identify, I guess, very specific limiting beliefs through this process and then really focus on them, it makes total sense how that can create massive shifts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. So I guess, are there any like tips and tricks for people to practice at home with NLP, like to catch themselves?
It's
like things that you could share that you think are. Like,
it's a wide body of work. It's an extensive trail of techniques. I could go on and on and on about all the different tools and techniques.
Can you give us one that you love? That we can share today.
Here's one from our master proc trainings. And like I'm kind of hesitant about just putting it out there for people to.
Well, I'm sure they're going to be inquiring to come and see you more. You know?
Yeah, but okay. So here's one. It's and you know it has to be done properly and it has to be done ethically. But back pain. It's something that we do in our master practitioner trainings. And there's a very very simple technique, and it's based on the premise that all chronic back pain has to do with an emotion that has not been acknowledged consciously at a conscious level. So it's an emotion that's running unconsciously. And because the person is not acknowledging it, it creates chronic pain. The premise being that the pain is trying to get your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you avoid it, the louder the pain gets. You know, so all chronic back pain, according to this branch of NLP, would suggest that it's based on an unresolved negative or unresolved emotion. We always thought it was a negative emotion, only to find out it wasn't the case. We have watched, again, I talk about these miracle moments, and watched what's happened in our training room.
So would you say the opposite? So it can be a negative, but the positive emotion would be like an unexpressed positive emotion?
Yeah, so for example, one of our students a few years ago, he had chronic back pain for 30 years, to the point of getting nerve injections and
all that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. So
really tragic.
Chronic pain for 30 years. And we started talking about it. The technique is very simple. And the technique is, what emotion are you feeling right now? And just let the person respond. Now, it could be a surface emotion, but chances are it's something that's running unconsciously. And we watched 30 years of back pain vanish in 6 minutes, 6-7 minutes.
Just verbally expressing.
Just by repeatedly asking the question, what emotion are you feeling right now? What emotion you're feeling right now, and just letting them answer. And
so, do you give them a list of emotions to pick from?
No,
whatever it translates to them.
It's whatever's coming from them. That would be me being suggestive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just asking the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we tell them like it's probably not a surface emotion, right? So just pick whatever word is bubbling up from inside. In this person's experience, you know, typically, you know, you would assume it's a negative emotion that the person is not acknowledging. In this case, it was a positive emotion, and the positive emotion was joy, of all things. And in this person's case, what had happened was at the source, 30 years ago when the back pain started, this person tragically lost his fiance to an aneurysm. She was fine 1 minute, and then she had an aneurysm and passed away just like that. He was young, he was 20 years old, ill-equipped to deal with that, not sure what to do. And he just, you know, did his best to get on with his life. But what he suppressed at that time was not a negative emotion. What he suppressed was his ability to feel joy.
Wow.
And once, just in this simple process of asking, what emotion are you feeling right now? And as long as you still have back pain, I keep asking.
So I feel into my back pain and try to see what.
No, you don't do anything. You're just answering a question.
Right? Simple. Yeah.
So, you know, what emotion are you feeling right now? And you just would say a word. And of course, the technique says as long as you're still feeling back pain, just ask yourself again. This is something I've used on myself.
Okay, that was my next question. Is something you can do on yourself?
In this case, that is one of the. I never recommend doing anything on yourself, right? Really. I think it's always done with a qualified practitioner. Mm-hmm. It's always best. But this is one of those things. If I'm experiencing any kind of back pain, I just start asking myself the question, what emotion am I feeling? What emotion am I feeling? And I just keep answering.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I still feel the pain, I just keep asking. And inevitably, I clear myself all the time. Well, I rarely have back pain. But in this case, it was exceptionally
fascinating. Like transformative. Like,
oh, we all saw it happen. It was a room full of people. There was like 27 people in the room. So, I mean, we all saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And the mobility that we saw in him in the days that followed.
Crazy.
It was amazing. He was running up and down the hallway. He was... like things that he was incapable of doing.
How much do you think of what you do is like placebo effect? And what I mean by that is not tricky, but believing that something can change.
I think belief has power.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that the placebo effect is something real.
Mm-hmm.
That could play into it. The techniques themselves, though,
there's something there.
There's something definitely there.
So I guess my next question would be, out of all the people you bring through this quantum healing?
Quantum change process,
or even through NLP.
Yeah.
Are there a certain amount of people it doesn't work on? Like that they're just resistant to this, like NLP, they're not? And if so, do you see any trend? Why?
If there's resistance, to chances, they're not going to come through the trainings anyway.
Or if someone has a client, more as a client that's coming in, like, do you find people that there's just no progress?
Very few and far between, it's possible.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think is the main factor? That is it something that is within them?
There's something called secondary gain.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary gain, it's an NLP thing. Secondary gain is when the gain of having the problem outweighs the pain of having the problem. So if there's some kind of payoff to my pain, whether it's physical pain, mental pain, emotional pain.
For some people, like just the attention is something they might have never had in their life.
Right.
Like that attention.
So I never got attention, so I have to create all these dramatic situations.
It was really bad for me. They're asking me how I'm doing.
And so there's the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one beautiful story. This is not one of my clients. It's one of Laura's clients. She's a 12-year-old girl. And she was overreacting. She was having all these emotional outbursts and creating all kinds of chaos on the home front. So naturally, her parents wanted her to get some help. Laura was explaining to this. She was only 12 years old, but she was saying, hey, let me teach you something. It's called secondary gain. And this 12-year-old goes, I know what it is. Laura said, like, really? Like, is there some kind of benefit to all these emotional outbursts that you keep happening, that you keep having? And the little girl, very smart young woman, says, actually, yes. Her mother was having serious bouts of depression.
Mm-hmm.
So mom would literally spend most of her time in bed. So this young girl was coming home from school. Mom was unavailable. Mom's in her bedroom. But the minute she had some kind of an emotional outburst, mom jumps out of bed and mom's available.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary gain. So in a world of secondary gain, if there's some kind of payoff. So we're always looking for something.
Okay, so in that situation then, she was hard to I guess, help because that secondary gain, it was hard to stop the outburst because she really wanted
it. No, it was easy, actually.
Once you realize?
Once you expose the secondary gain, then anything is possible.
Okay.
If there is secondary gain there and you don't expose it, that's where you run the risk of not having success with your client. So we're constantly looking for secondary gain and getting rid of that immediately.
So as a parent, so I'm going to ask you a parenting question. I find my kids specifically, and I know some other parents who have this insurmountable fear of everything.
Yes.
Can't go to the bathroom by themselves. They need to sleep together, my kids. Yes. Like, and during the day now, they're scared. Okay, is that something NLP can help in a child that's 6 and 8 years old?
Mm-hmm. We typically say that... 7 years of age and above is sort of the magical age where you can actually start doing something therapeutic. However, you know, I mean, we've had instances. I mean, even my children. I didn't wait till they were seven to
start working on children.
You know, I used other methods. I worked with a naturopath and so on. So whenever there was an issue, I was always looking for a solution. But ultimately, in sort of an NLP world, if we're talking about therapy or therapeutic use, age of 7 and up.
And there's specific fear protocols for kids, or is again,
it depends
for every kid what the source is. You try to find that route.
Every situation has to be evaluated individually, and there's no. But once you analyze that situation from an individual perspective, whether it's a child or an adult, then the toolkit, the NLP toolkit, is vast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like I was a chronic fingernail biter. I had no control, and I had been biting my nails since I was a child. My mother did the same thing, and I had no control over that behavior, and I really, really disliked it. And it was in my first NLP training when I was a student. There's a protocol in NLP to get rid of sort of minor behaviors like fingernail biting or picking your skin or, you know, sort of irritating behaviors that we may have that we seem to have no control over. There's something in NLP. It's one of the tools. It's called the swish pattern. And in minutes, my 40-year nail-biting habit vanished in minutes. And it was done to me by someone who was just learning at the same time. You know, we were both fumbling our way through it because we were just learning this for the first time. Mm-hmm. But we both had success on each other.
Wow.
And she knocked out a 40-year habit of biting my fingernails. That's just one of the NLP.
In a few minutes.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. So I guess once the light switch flicks on, it's like, oh.
So it's a lot of NLP works with the pictures inside your brain. You know, there's sort of an image we have for every thought that we have. So that's called submodalities. So you could actually work with the internal representations in a person's mind when they think of something, slightly change it, and it changes everything.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
And that was called the swish method.
That's called the swish pattern, the one that I used to get rid of my fingernail biting habit. We've done that for frustration and traffic.
Well, for like smoking and stuff like that.
Smoking is a little bit more of a challenge. Smoking you can get rid of it a number of ways, but again, that's something that you have to
figure out why you smoke in the first place.
Right. It could be much deeper.
Much deeper. That makes sense. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll. Just curiosity, what are you excited about learning about? You seem like a smart guy. It's always adding to your repertoire. Is there anything on the
non-stop learning
that you like? What's next on your radar? Like, what's something that's really you're curious about that you want to learn more about?
The whole world of NLP is fascinating for me. Everything that I'm doing, but ultimately, right now, my focus is on. I've been meditating for a very long time, and lately, my problem has been consistency. But I'm at a place in my life where I really want to take my meditation practice to an entirely different level. That's going to be my focus for 2020.
Okay.
Very personal and individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
I use a very specific style of meditation that's always worked for me. It took me years to find it. But once I found it, it just worked.
Can you share the name of it?
Yeah, it's Kriya Yoga.
Okay, yeah,
it's Paramahansa Yogananda. I learned the technique from him decades ago. Anyhow, it's the next area of exploration for me.
Okay, cool. Some other questions I'd like to ask.
Sure.
Is there any books you're reading right now? Or is there any real books that you recommend to people who are...
I really enjoyed... the next book I want to get my hands on is... my goodness, why I can't think of the title right now. That's strange.
Is there an NLP tactic for memory?
It's right there. I could actually see the book cover. It's sitting on my night table. I read it years ago, and now there's a follow-up book. And I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I just lost the title.
Any like apps or gadgets that you find are super helpful as an entrepreneur or in like NLP or like daily practice? Anything that you use? Are you a tech guy? Or?
I'm a techno peasant.
Techno peasant. Okay.
So I don't rely much on apps or anything technological. I just use technology, whatever technology I need to get through the business of my day. But I'm not a gadget person.
Cool. Before we share where people can get a contact with you, is there any questions that I haven't asked you that you wish I would have asked you?
No, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay.
No, it's all good.
Anything that you want to share openly without a question asking?
We have, for all of your viewers, your listeners, as I said last month, we just released our book. It's called Evolved NLP.
Okay.
So I just want to make it available to anyone who's interested. They can go to www.evolvednlpbook.com and you can sign up there and you'll get a free digital copy
your
inbox.
We'll put the link to that in the description here as well.
Okay.
So Evolved NLP, your company is called Avalon Empowerment.
That's correct.
Do you have a website for the company as well?
Yes, it's avalonempowerment.com.
Do you guys do any online trainings, or is it all like in-person?
Well,
certifications?
Yeah. Here's the transition. So, we're going through a major transition. Up until now, so for the past 10 years, all of our trainings were live. You know, so that meant 7-day trainings, 14-day trainings. We found it very difficult for people to commit to that.
Mm.
Not to mention, you know, the changes, you know, in our sort of version of NLP, what we call Evolved NLP. So. What we're doing now in 2020 is a combination of online training and live training.
Nice.
So a lot
I
of the
believe hybrid is the future, to be honest.
Exactly. And so, you know, people are asking for it. People want it. So we said, okay, but, you know, how do we best serve? And so we're just in that transition process right now. Videos are being uploaded every week.
Cool.
I suspect in the next month or two, the website is also under construction. Reconstruction as a result. So yeah, we're at avalonempowerment.com, and as I said, in the next month or two, all the videos are going to be uploaded, ready to go, and our website should be up very shortly.
Very cool. Thank you. So make sure you check out Ernie's great guys. He did some great work, and I just found out what an interesting story he has too. And so thank you for coming here. We're
thank
here
you.
In Toronto at Elemental. If you're in the area, come check us out. You can see this exact room here. And try some of our services here. And also encourage you guys to help share this podcast, get the word out on Ernie and his great work. And you can like, subscribe, comment, whatever you feel like. Thank you for those who already subscribed. Really appreciate you guys. And wish you guys to have a wonderful day. And if anything in this podcast resonated, if there's any curiosity of a spark, that's usually a sign, your intuition, there's something there for you. So whether it was a word Ernie said or something that I said or a question I asked sparked some sort of like, oh, that's interesting. Like, go deeper on that. You know, do a web search, Google search. Check out Ernie's website. Whatever it is, I encourage you to dive deeper on it. So thanks again. Have a great day, everyone. And
thank you.
Okay.